Okay, hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. I believe was called On Purpose. I'm John Duffy, and over there is your favorite Chicago writer and the creative director of the very soon to be released Parent Nation, Heidi Stevens. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, John. How have you been?
I'm good. It is On Purpose, right? Is that the name of this?
That sounds like vaguely familiar. I'm going to have to Google to be sure. But it was something like that. It had purpose.
Yes.
In it. Yeah.
It's been a moment since
it's been a minute, which is, I think, a podcast that records with some sort of regularity, unlike ours.
Some people have schedules for shows, right? But we decided against that kind. We're going against type here. The thing is, we were probably going to bag the whole thing, but we made a list, and yeah.
We were selected for a list. We didn't. We sit down together and make a list that, like,
We were selected.
We made it onto a list.
We were elected onto a list, maybe. I think there was a massive vote. And
right. We won all 50 wards of the city. Yeah. Just like Lori, which is then that was going great. So the precedent is good.
Right. So having made the list, I think, we just had to get dressed up and get on the podcast.
Right. I am dressed up. Are you?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? I've got my finery.
Okay. So we don't have a fancy podcast like Glennon where you watch the people talk. You just have to picture us talking. And I actually can't see you, but I'm going to assume that you're telling the truth and you're dressed up.
I'm going to assume you are too. And I think it's kind of just a cheap thing that Glennon does to be able to see them. But just trust us. We look amazing right now. Don't you
think? Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I look a lot like a former soccer powerhouse. Right. And you look a lot like Glennon's sister. So
stunningly like Glennon's sister.
Yeah.
Right. So you can call me sister or brother or whatever you like during the podcast.
I probably won't, but thank you. What should we talk about? Because it's been 7 or 8 months.
Well, I've been looking through some of your recent work, and one of the pieces that you've written jumps out at me, and it was about banned books.
That's becoming a thing.
It's kind of, right.
Right. So they're like making a comeback.
Yeah.
Banning books is making a comeback.
Yeah, who knew Catcher in the Rye wasn't the last book we were going to ban? But we've got a whole new slew of them, including, like, comic novels about the Holocaust, which is, kind of a – it's a fresh take on banning a book.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
The New York Times had a story that talked about how the effort to ban books is the highest – the number of books is the highest in 3 decades. And people are taking it to crazy lengths, like threatening and even, I think, in some cases, actually going through with it to sue librarians and teachers for providing certain titles. I don't know of any lawsuits that have actually succeeded, but that has a chilling effect, especially if you're a teacher and you're deciding what to assign and you're thinking, okay, do I feel like dealing with the bullshit of being sued or
losing my job?
Go with Anne of Green Gables. Like, I think a lot of people are just going to go with Anne of Green Gables, which is fine. I loved that book in sixth grade, but like, is it building a whole bunch of paths toward better understanding history and your place in the world and empathy and all the things that like you kind of would hope books would do? Not really.
And one thing I will throw out here is when a book is banned, I've noticed that the kids I work with are immediately drawn to that book and are drawn to banned books in general. I worked with this boy recently who was really upset that, he couldn't choose books to read for English class. They were assigned to him because they had to read the classics. And he's a persistent kid who likes to press the envelope. And his big point with his English teacher was, who decides that? Like, Shakespeare mm-hmm. didn't decide he was writing a classic, and, you know, mm-hmm. and Melville didn't know he was writing a classic.
Right.
He didn't say, you know, I hope kids centuries from now annotate this, you know?
Right.
Right. So why do you get to decide what the classic is? Why can't we have a say in that? Which I think
and
is kind of clever.
And why doesn't it change after,
yes.
you know, a century or so? Yeah.
Well, when George was in high school, I read the books that he read. I decided, okay, I'm going to kind of either update my knowledge or, you know, and probably help him out with a paper or two. But I enjoyed mm-hmm. that. But it was mostly stuff I'd read before in high school. So nothing, you're right. It hasn't changed in decades. And kids are drawn towards something that is fresh and new. And so I begs the question, you know, like, should we be protecting our kids from certain information, right? You know, like that seems to be.
Can we? I mean, to your point, you know, your clients are coming in saying like, okay, I can't wait to read this book now that it's banned.
Right.
So, and of course they can access whatever the hell they want so much faster than we could even begin to imagine how to keep them from accessing it. Like, they've already downloaded it and it's in their brain. Can we is a question. Should we is a question next door to the first question. And I guess the part that makes me sad is, okay, banning a book does not keep a kid from reading it. Telling a kid they can't listen to that version of that song doesn't keep a kid from listening to that version of that song, right? I just feel like it's a lost opportunity for the grown-up in the situation to grow and learn, for the relationship between the child and the grown-up, whether that's a parent and a kid, a teacher and a kid, a coach and a kid. It stifles that relationship from growing. And it also, like, steps back when a kid could maybe use some guidance through that song or that story or that part of history. Like, I don't understand the need or the desire to hide this stuff from kids. I think if we're being useful and helping our kids navigate the world they actually live in rather than the one we wish they lived in,
right.
Then we dive in there and just have those conversations alongside them, rather than trying to avoid having those conversations in the first place, or do whatever we can to keep those ideas out of their heads so they don't go have those conversations with their friends. Or, I mean, it just is like, it seems so like a fool's errand, and B, mm-hmm. just like such a lost opportunity. Like, some of my best conversations with my kids are about controversial stuff, and I learn so much from them. I learn so much about them. I have to question some of my own, like, biases or assumptions or stands on stuff. Like, oh, okay, so you think this? Well, that doesn't make sense because 10 minutes ago you said this. It's like, oh, right. That's a good point. Let me revisit that. I'm the adult. I'm done growing. I'm like, I'm the adult and I'm still living. So help me grow. Like, and I feel like we should just be doing that with each other. And God, what better to help us do that than books and songs and, you know, anything that someone created for us to, like, ingest, right?
Agreed. Yeah. And I won't reiterate, but I agree with everything you've just said. And there is this idea that, you know, we want to, instead of having those conversations with our kids, we want our kids to, we often, probably out of some degree of anxiety or fear about what they're going to take in and what kind of opinions they're going to develop, we make our kids other, right? So we'll have those conversations with our friends and, you know, with other contemporaries, people we work with, but, you know, somehow our kids are different. And, you know, I probably talk too much about how fortunate I am to talk with kids in this setting where it's real open and it's confidential. And it's so interesting to learn from kids, you know, like that. And I think we forget that we're we're not just supposed to teach them, that we're there's so much to learn from them. They know so much about the culture that we are not connected with, you know, and it's refreshing, and it probably in the end it gives you an air of hope. It makes kids feel more competent that we recognize, like, okay, you get this. I don't know how this works, you know, like if you're getting some of your news from this piece of social media here, is that safe? Show me how this works, you know, like show me why you're cool with that, why you rely on that, why you believe it. And kids are pretty good at like pointing out, like, you know, yeah, I see this here on TikTok, and then I'll double check it here. And, you know, like if I see three or four times, you know, like I see the same thing, I'm going to be like, okay, there might be something to this. But, you know, just to hear how discerning your kid is, even the quietest kid who you think, I've worked with so many situations, family situations, where the implication was he or she doesn't have much going on. They're just not thinking. They're just on their phones all the time. Mm-hmm. And those kids are thinking all the time. They have like really, really, really strong opinions about things. And once they're given kind of an open opportunity to express their views without shame or whatever it is they're afraid of, they're all amazing, man. Like you get something from them that does probably alter your view of the world. Or at times, you know, I will admit, like sometimes a kid will say something in here and I'm like, holy shit, that's exactly what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
Like today. Like, you know, you're here for therapy with me, and yet, man, that I needed that. Like, so thank you for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It also strikes me that, you know, the one, I can't think of a single part of our kids' lives that won't benefit from empathy, from them having a pretty finely honed sense of empathy, and being able to like access empathy. Everything. I mean, all of their relationships, of course. But even their ability to thrive in the workplace, you know, or understand, you know, political discourse or anything. I think I just think they'll be better at everything and have a richer, fuller life if they can tap into their own empathy. And that's the stuff where, you know, you're saying it's not our job just to teach them. And I wholeheartedly agree. But I also think a lot of our job is to teach them, but but not just to teach them to like memorize stuff or like do the work that needs to get done to get the grade or get the, you know, pass the test, or but like teach them, you know, that the beginning of the banned book column that you brought up was where I talked about how my son's social studies teacher had assigned them, you know, this worksheet on the Little Rock Nine and, you know, the nine high schoolers who integrated the high school in Little Rock and, you know, were met with the violent mob and the, you know, police has cleared them away and all that stuff. And the worksheet, the assignment, asked the kids, you know, how might that day, and this isn't the exact wording, but essentially how might that day have been different if some of the white students kind of broke ranks and went and, you know, were upstanders or, you know, sided with those nine kids trying to integrate the high school. How might that have gone? And it wasn't even, I mean, I'm sure there are people who are rolling their eyes so hard at that and think it's critical race theory or making white kids feel bad about themselves or something.
That very thing. Right. Yes.
Not necessarily listening to us, maybe listening to us, but I know if I told that story in certain crowds, it would be like, oh my God. Yeah. So the white kids can feel like it's all their fault that, you know, some black kids got kicked out of school. It's like, it's not that. A, my son's school is majority black. So the assignment wasn't to make white kids. The teacher made a whole assignment about, you know, to make my son feel bad, which is not what happened.
right.
Just as an aside, second of all, it, struck me as such a perfect way of like taking yourself to that day in history and thinking about all of the things that had to happen for it to turn out that way, right? Like, I just think we think of history as like this thing that happened and it was pre-scripted and now I got to memorize somebody's name and the date and how old they were and how long something lasted and blah, blah. And I just think like, what a cool way to learn about all the forces and people and stories that shaped where we are today. If you can go back and like put yourself in the person's shoes and then also be thinking about, okay, what, like, what's history going to look like when people are learning about today? And like, what's my role in making it, you know, not a repeat of the worst version of ourselves? And what's my role in, you know, maybe being an upstander? What's my role in, you know, what's my role? And like to take books or ideas or voices off the table that are going to help our kids and ourselves, like discover that process and interrogate our past. I don't know. It just seems so short-sighted to me.
I totally agree. I can imagine that there might be somebody out there kind of rolling their eyes at the idea of bringing empathy into the classroom, you know what I mean? And into like a history lesson. And yet I think that is the most clever way to, first of all, to teach about like how we shape history, right? That we can be, we're doing it all the time. And you know, and I kind of get fed up with the idea, which I hear often, that empathy is not a show of strength, but it's a, you know, it's kind of like one of these very, very soft skills and, you know, really has a place, but it's not everywhere. Sometimes you really have to show strength, right? You know, and I, you know, and this is very Brene Brown of me in my head, but, you know, like I think that, you know, when our kids show empathy, that's them at their strongest, purest, and I'm always kind of blown away by where it comes from, because I work with kids who are of different political persuasions. I'm fortunate enough to work with kids who are, even though I'm in the suburbs, it's a fairly diverse crowd, and yet there's this kind of underlying vibe in that generation of kids I'm working with now that, you know, like, well, no, we're very supportive of each other. Like, we're pretty well aligned. We disagree on some really, really important fundamental things. Like, we'll have a mask walkout or something like that, but you don't mess with somebody. You don't, you know, you don't go out of your way to hurt somebody's feelings. That's not, that is not okay. You know, like I draw the line there, you know? And so they're, whether we're part of the dialogue or not, they're having it. And so I just
That's
circling
a huge
back to what
point.
I mean, so circling back to what you were saying, like, you know, there is this richness that kids can bring to our lives if we can get the word parenting out of our heads sometimes, you know, and just stop doing that, you know,
like,
if that's a directive of some kind, right, where that requires some degree of control, I think it's important to recognize how little you have and how little you need to parent effectively, and that that connection might be the most important thing you do.
Yeah.
You know, like that connection and listening and acknowledging that, ooh, that's a reasonable point of view, or even if it's a developing point of view, to recognize the parts of it that really make sense to you. And then maybe to gently suggest, like, have you considered this? You know, like, here's part of what I think, you know, and
I just was going to say, I'm also thinking about all the times when, as a kid, my parents would try to remove either me from a situation that they were uncomfortable with me being exposed to, or remove the thing that was making them uncomfortable, whether it was, and I wrote about this too in the column about, you know, just letting our kids listen to the explicit versions of songs. Right. How my mom was like appalled by the Footloose soundtrack and Madonna and stuff that's like so hilariously tame, and it's kind of adorable. And I adore my mom, and I don't, there is absolutely no judgment or shame in any of this. We all do the best, I think, for the most part, we all do the best parenting we can in the moment. And I have tremendous grace for everybody's parenting all the time. But anyway,
100%, it's not easy.
I do things so incredibly different from how my parents did them. But she would turn the radio off, right, if Like a Virgin came on or Papa Don't Preach came on. Or I remember one time us going to, I think it was Teen Wolf with friends, and she was chaperoning us. And she made us get up and leave the theater. It was like a little too racy. It was probably PG-13 or something. Stuff like that. Amazing. All the time. We'd be at like a baseball game and the people around us would be swearing, and my dad would be like, "We're out of here." Like, you know, like it's not family friendly. And we were out of there. I mean, we were out of there. And the number of like fucking hilarious stories my kids and I have with each other about like stuff we've, I mean, Will and I have entire conversations in the voice of like drunk Michigan fan we sat next to one day at the Northwestern game. Yeah. Who like accidentally zipped his phone inside his coat pocket and then couldn't get it out, and then like tore his coat apart to get his phone out, and then was like talking about how his girlfriend was gonna have to sew it shut for him when he got home. It was like amazing. I mean, that was probably 4 years ago. Like, we still will have like whole dialogues as drunk Michigan fan. But and excellent. I guess my point is like this, like as I said earlier, like it's the world your kids live in. So you could like, you could keep removing them from that stuff and say like, it's not appropriate. Like, I don't want that filling their heads right now. And I totally get that. But at the same time, like if in places where you can, if you can like sort of let your guard down a little bit about being the parent, you know, about parenting, like you just said, and just sort of like experience this world by their side, like it can be so fun. And it can be, you know, later, like that drunk Michigan fan didn't look cool to Will. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, wow, bro spent that much money on tickets and like sat there drunk and zipped his phone in his pocket. Like that, you know, it was like basically an after school special for like, don't drink, you know?
Right.
I mean, so I just think, you know, sometimes lessons present themselves organically, and just fun memories and stuff happen a little bit more easily if you're not sort of out there with your like radar up all the time. Like, what do I shut down? What do I keep them from hearing? What do I keep them from seeing? You know, and just start sort of like, yeah, well, you know, that's how that guy acted. right. Now we'll make fun of him for 4 years and done.
Yeah. Right. But lesson learned too, right? I mean, I love that drunk Michigan fan did so many things for your family, right? He was a lesson. And, you know, like, you know, okay, let's not make fools of ourselves, you know, like, and without a lecture, which would have fallen way flatter. Right. And it's part of the texture of your family now. And that little bit of humor, I talk a lot about the emotional bank account. And, you know, people always say, like, you know, well, what are you talking about? How do you fill it up? Like, my kid hates me. You know, and a lot of it
I'm
is
overdrawn.
Just that. Like, talk about the drunk Michigan guy. Like,
right.
You know, like, that's how you build it up. It's kind of like, you know, get into the world with them, bring them out in the world. Because that's one problem that we had in my family, probably to a greater extreme, is, you know, when I was growing up, we there was no music in the house, except there was an album. And it was the Notre Dame marching band playing the fight song. So we did have music in the house.
That's your soundtrack.
7 days. That was our soundtrack. my brother snuck in the Guess Who, but my sister, Mary Ellen, had Goodbye Yellow Brick Road in her closet and a record player. And so, you know,
and a stash of weed, obviously.
I would imagine. I gotta ask her about that. I gotta know.
I'm totally kidding. That's just like the parental nightmare. Like, oh, well, that's just a gateway to drugs.
But yeah, I mean, but we weren't. So in covertly, when nobody was around, I would go sit in my sister's closet and listen to Elton John. Elton John. And, you know, and this was the racy thing, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, this was the forbidden thing in the house. Yep. And so we never had these talks about anything, you know? No. It was kind of like, and so it was quiet, and there wasn't many deposits made in any bank accounts anywhere. And I yeah. love the dynamic of like, all right, we're in this situation. It might be a little dicey, but we're a family. We're going to do this thing. And, you know, we'll probably have stories to tell, things to laugh about later. So, yeah. You know, I'm not sure how we got to this point, but I think having the experience by and large, if it's not completely, you know, reckless, is a better answer, is a better story than not having the experience with your kids.
I think so. It's definitely where I fall. I mean, as a failure. I mean, it's definitely right. where I land. That's what I should say. That's definitely where I land. I don't know, is it partly just sort of the path of least resistance, or like, I don't want to waste the money. I already bought the tickets. We're not leaving this game.
Right.
Plus the line for the L is long or whatever.
Yeah. I definitely want to go to the thing. And, you know, yeah. I do have these kids here.
Right. Admittedly, there might be a little bit of that, but mostly it's, you know, it's just kind of a desire to, hang around them being my kids, in all different settings, and just see what they're like and what their takeaway is, and have stuff to talk about later. And I don't know, that that kind of goes for outings, books, music. Now, you know, would I go so far as to say, like, I want my kids' teachers taking the same approach? You know, not necessarily, but your teacher right. plays a different role than your parent does. And I am comfortable with my kids' teachers challenging them and introducing stuff that makes them a little uncomfortable. I am comfortable with that. I can't get my head around that, that parenting instinct. Like, I don't want the Florida don't say gay bill. Like, I don't want you talking about gender and sexuality to my kid without running it by me first. Like, I don't quite understand that instinct. Like, you need to run it all by me first. He's my kid,
right.
or she's my kid, or they're my kid.
Right.
I sort of feel like, man, I'll take like all the help I can get. Like, if you could go ahead and help me shape my child into a good human, be my guest, coach, and teacher, mentor, neighbor, friend's mom.
And I'll throw this out. I was slower to come to that than you are. Julie and I were very protective of George. We did not want him to know that people could be cruel, that people could be awful. Mm. First of all, we did realize, trying to protect him from that is folly, and it's not fair to him. To not understand how the world works. And, you know, one thought I'll throw out, and then I think our time, we've got to go to a commercial,
right.
that if you approach parenting like you do, you know, my son is 10 years older than your daughter, and the connection and the fun and those in jokes have legs that carry you. And George is buying a condo right now. He's got a whole lot going on in his life. And he calls us and consults with us. And we're part of his life. And part of that is because we didn't overparent. We allowed him to be part of the conversation all along. And so, you know, us being part of the conversation with him as an adult now doesn't feel foreign, because it's never really changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I love that. Yeah. And that's really good just personally for me to hear too, because I am not in that phase yet. You know, my kids are still in my house and under my roof and teenagers,
right.
and, you know, Will's almost a teenager, 12, but, you know, it's nice to get that little glimpse into the future and see how that kind of stuff pays off or pans out.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So, we've got to go.
A word from our sponsors.
We have a word. Right? Stay tuned for a word from our sponsors.
Now that we're on a list.
Right. And I suspect we may be back here sooner than within the next 6 months or so.
Should we try? I mean,
let's do that.
So
let's just decide. It is so fun. All right, okay. Good. Let's plan on it. We will talk to you guys soon. Heidi, have an awesome day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.